Welcome back to the Northeast Newscast. On this week's episode, publisher Michael Bushnell is at Northeast High School with Kansas City Public Schools' new superintendent, Dr. Jennifer Collier.
This episode of the Northeast Newscast was made possible by Shemeika's Online Market in Delhi and Seberg Mufflers. Thanks for tuning in.
And you are the superintendent of schools here in the Kansas City, Missouri School District.
Yes, I am.
And you're smiling when you say that.
I am smiling when I say that.
Good, absolutely. You started your career here as a Viking teaching music. What's it like being back with in Viking territory as the superintendent of schools?
It's amazing. Sometimes it feels surreal. Certainly at the time when I was here teaching music, I had no idea that I would actually become superintendent of this school district, but I'm honored. My time here at Northeast High School was wonderful. 10 years as a teacher and then 2 years as an assistant principal. And I always loved Northeast High School because of its rich diversity and culture. At the time when I was here, we had over, 30 languages spoken and many countries represented by our students and our staff. And that experience was rich. It was a place, and it continues to be a place that's rich with diversity, but also an acceptance and a celebration of those cultures and the differences. And it was just beautiful to be a part of a community like this.
Were you here when the flags got painted on the gym, or did that predate you, or were you here then?
Yes, I was here when the flags were painted.
But it was a summer project that, and you're right, it really does. It represents kind of all of the cultures and the nationalities.
It's a wonderful thing to see.
It is. It really is. And what we didn't, as neighborhood people, we didn't really believe it when they said, okay, we're going to paint all these flags and they're not going to get graffitied. And they didn't.
No, because there's such a respect. And that's what I was talking about. Even though there was diversity here, students from many countries, many different languages, I love the way that the students embrace one another and celebrated one another. I remember every year we would have a cultural, ethnic festival and presentation, and our students and our staff would share the music of their culture, the clothing of their culture, the dance, the art forms. And it was such a wonderful celebration and something that all of us looked forward to every year. And so I feel like our society as a whole has a lot to learn from the way students here at Northeast treat one another and accept and embrace one another. It was just really beautiful to see.
I will say, when I've come to Northeast for events, it's very neat to see that student culture of coming together for the common goal. And I really like that. I've lived here 33 years. So okay. This is not news to me, but it's very cool to see the students.
I've always said, I feel like Northeast High School, and really on the Northeast end, there are several schools that are some of the best kept secrets in Kansas City, because I feel like our students really get a true real world experience when they're here in a setting like this with people from all over, and they have to learn a lot about one another. And in fact, even as an educator, I know that I was a teacher and I taught our students, but the truth is I learned so much from our students. And I started as a very, young adult. And so most of my young adult years were spent here, and I grew up in this place. Like, I literally grew into the woman I am today right here at Northeast High School. But I learned so much from our students.
I want our Northeast readers and listeners to take note of that, because that's extremely important. And it's a proud moment to say that the superintendent of schools came from this school in terms of first teaching gigs. I think that's cool. Absolutely. Let's talk about reading. And reading is a passion of yours, and it's critical to future student success. Yes. So what's your, and just full disclosure, my wife is a retired educator. She was a debate coach for 20 years, or 30 years, excuse me. So she and I are on the same page on this. What's your plan for bringing reading skills up to the necessary levels to help inspire student success?
Well, I think the first step is what we're doing this year, and it's really putting a laser focus on reading. I think sometimes in the school system, you can do so many things, and a lot of the things we're doing are important. We have to continue to do, but we can't take our eyes off literacy and proficiency in math. Those are two areas we must focus. And as you stated, reading is foundational for all other learning. And so when we equip our students with strong reading literacy skills, and when I say literacy, I'm talking about reading, writing, and communication. Those three are necessary for future success. When we laser focus on that, we provide the supports that our students need, then we are actually setting them up for a fruitful future. And that's what we want. We want our students to have the life, the career, the experiences that they want and they deserve, but we have to make sure we equip them. So the first is that laser focus, making sure we're providing the supports. This year, we allocated every school a reading interventionist. You know, we got ESSER funds because of COVID. So we said, while we have these, let's get the reading support into all of our buildings. We were able to do that this year, reading and math interventionists, in fact. We are also allocated funds for a tutoring program. But this was a tutoring program specifically for some of our tier three schools, our schools that shows the most need. And this is where they can get one-on-one tutoring or extremely small group tutoring. It's quite expensive, but we were able to do that this year. And so my responsibility now is looking at how can we continue to have these supports. Even when ESSER funds run out, it's going to be important that we continue to really provide extra supports and reinforcements around literacy for our students.
And regardless of if a student chooses college or if they choose the trades, those are the skills, reading and writing, or the three R's, as we used to call them growing up. Those are the skills that will ensure success down the road. And you used a term that I hadn't heard before, interventionist.
And so our reading and math interventionists, they are not classroom teachers. They are extra support staff that work with students in small groups to target certain skills that students need around in reading and math. And they pull those students out throughout the day and they give them the extra tutoring and support in those areas.
So that's outside the classroom experience.
That is outside. However, those reading and math interventionists collaborate very closely with the classroom teacher. So, you know, the classroom teacher may communicate, these are the needs for this particular group of students. I need for you to work on this skill with them. So there's a lot of collaboration happening. But what it does is, because it's very difficult for a classroom teacher to address all of these needs in
right.
one setting. You have some students that are that may be below. You have others that are above where they need to be. And you need to be able to try to meet every child and not just only target some.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that extra support relieves that teacher and it allows them to do just that. So that's what we've done this year, adding those extra staff members in, those interventionists. And what they're doing is they're intervening. They're taking care of those deficiencies that are showing up in student performance in reading and math.
And do you have any data as to where that's going? How is that in terms of performance?
Yeah, so we are seeing good growth in our students our students take the iReady test three times a year. They take it in the fall for baseline. Then they take it again in the winter in December, and then they take it again in the spring. We're seeing really good growth happening. Also a reflection in our MAP scores. We saw significant growth in the area of math and science last year. Our ELA reading stayed flat, but in those other two areas, we saw really good growth. So we are seeing benefits of having those interventionists in place.
I want to skip to Blueprint 2030, if we could. Where is the district and board on that program, and what additional impacts will that program have for Northeast parents as it continues to be implemented?
So for Blueprint 2030, where we are now, if you remember, the final recommendation was closure of two schools, but then also a very intentional and intensive education and engagement phase with our community. And so that's called Moving Forward Together. And this is where we're going to work with our community to address several areas that are important in our school system. The very first is the academics. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have subcommittees, a larger task force, and we're going to find opportunities for anyone who's interested in our community, be that a parent, student, community members, to come and engage with us over a year-long process, and we will work through these issues together. One of the things that we put forth, I think, at the last board meeting that the decision was made for those two school closures, was that we're looking at a model that will help us determine in the future if a closure needs to happen. These are the characteristics or things we're looking at. These are our indicators that we're looking at. And all the schools will be weighed according to those indicators. And that will give us an indication of which schools, if there has to be closure, that we'll look at. Now, of course, there's a human element to all of this because we can't just let the numbers decide, because let's say there are three or four schools in the same community. We wouldn't close down all the schools in one community. So there has to be a human factor where we also look at where does it make most sense to close schools if we have to do it in the future. But the important part is that we're bringing our community in with us, and they're going through this process with us. We want it to be transparent, very open. We want them to know that that we're not targeting any community or going after any particular community, but making sure they understand the process and they're walking with us through that. So when we get to the end, if we need to close more, people understand why. They may not always agree. They may not even like it, and we understand that. But if our data says that we have to because our enrollment is too low, then we are going to have to make some difficult decisions. But my hope is also through this, and one of the things I noticed, there was a renewed interest in KCPS and excitement for KCPS that I love. My hope is that we can leverage that to turn our enrollment trends around so that we don't have to close as many schools as we thought we would need to.
And going back to those school closures, we had two schools in Northeast, mm-hmm. and this school, not slated for Northeast High School, not slated for closure, but I guess reformatting.
Yes, it was reformatting, and it was like in the third phase. It was like several years down the road, contingent upon a bond and some other things, yes.
So we're not, not saying that, I'm not asking you for a guarantee, but we probably are not going to see, well, are Whittier and James safe for now?
They are safe for now, but I do want to remind everyone, like, there were several factors that went into schools that were selected, because I know a lot of people were concerned that Whittier and James are two of our higher performing schools.
Right, and that's mm-hmm. what I was going, why would your 83 and 85 respectively?
Yeah.
What went into that decision?
So there were several factors that were considered. One of those was building condition, and we talk a lot now about this bond that we need so that we can update our buildings. We have over $350 million worth of deferred maintenance. James and Whittier are two schools with extremely low building condition scores. And so that was one of the factors for that. Also, enrollment trends, particularly at James, the enrollment has declined and it's been continuously declining. So it wasn't just looking at the academics, that's important for us, but also looking at the enrollment trends in that school, and then also looking at building condition. That was another thing that went into making that that original decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it speaks to our need to pass a bond so that we can address the deferred maintenance, so that we can build new buildings for our children. I've been telling everyone, I want our students in this school district to have the same kind of buildings that their peers have in other school systems. And it's not even a question in other communities. They don't question whether they're going to pass a bond. They don't question whether they want the best and the finest schools for their children. We in this community have to do the same thing. We have to want that for our children. And right now, many of our buildings are very old, some over 100 years old. There's a lot of deferred maintenance, and they just simply aren't set up to facilitate the kind of educational experience that we want our children to have.
And I can speak to the importance of that bond issue coming from Park Hill High School in the mm-hmm. in the 1970s. You know, I was the last class. We had split shifts. We had juniors and seniors that went to school from 5:30 in the morning to noon, and then as a freshman and sophomore, we went from noon until 6:30 at night. And so that was because Park Hill couldn't pass a bond issue then.
Wow.
So, and they ultimately did, and they started building, mm-hmm. and people finally got it that this is why this is important. Yeah. But for many years, that was the norm.
And quite frankly, I wonder a lot about how particularly our high school students feel, because they are engaged in all types of competitions with students from other school districts, and they go regularly to these other districts, you know, for sports or for debate or whatever it is that they're involved mm-hmm. in, and they walk into these buildings. I have to wonder what message that sends to them. What are they thinking when they see their peers that they're competing with these quality schools, these quality buildings, and yet they come back to ours and they don't look that way?
Right.
Are we inadvertently sending a message to them that makes them feel like they're less worthy or less valuable?
And it's an extremely important point, because I don't know if we, being a debate husband, we traveled around to different schools. So you go into Staley, or you go into some of the newer, you know, Blue Springs, or even some of the independent schools, and it's, I mean, well, Independence did a lot for their athletic program, but not so much academics when they built that stadium. I'm off track, but never mind me.
That's okay. Back to the facts, right?
Right. And that was one of, you know, my wife and I said, well, you could have spent the same amount of money on academics and got better results. But yeah, buildings, I think are so important.
It gives kids a sense of pride.
It does.
Like look at our building. And I would think you want to come to a place that's beautiful and that's set up in a way that once again helps facilitate the kind of learning that we know that our students want and that what we want to provide for them.
Just real quick, KCPS regained accreditation last year. How do you plan to keep the district not only on the right track, but exceeding expectations?
Well, I think going back to really laser focusing on our academics, not taking our eye off of that. In KCPS, there are a lot of things that we have to do, a lot of things that we do within our community, but we can't prioritize that over academics. And I think that's the main thing that we need to do there. But also looking at how can we enhance even some of the current academic programming that we have. You know, we're looking at, for the secondary level, really exposing our students to career pathways, giving them experiences where they can have internships, preparing them for college for those who may not want to go to college, making sure that they can earn an industry recognized credential. So if they want to go into a career afterwards, they can. But it's really creating those learning, real world learning experiences for our students and making sure that the way we're instructing, the way we're teaching is really student-centered. It's what our students want. They're leading in their learning. They are researching. They're collaborating. They're gaining all of those 21st century skills that employers want them to have around collaboration, communication, preparing our students in a different way than what we've done historically. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we do that and we're very intentional about how we do it, we're going to continue to move forward as a school system.
How is charter school? Let's talk charter school enrollment. How does that impact KCPS, and what is being done from a marketing standpoint to bring students back to Kansas City Public School classrooms?
Yeah, so charter schools, and it's interesting because most school districts don't deal with charters. It's not something they have to even ever think about. But in KCPS, we know that that's our reality. And the truth is, it has impacted the enrollment here in KCPS. Families have more choices. I think sometimes they're not always fully informed about those choices. And I think, unfortunately, there's been a perception that charters are better. But when we look at our student performance data, if parents really look at it, they'll be able to see not necessarily the case. Some of them are performing well, so I don't want to disparage charters in any way because some of them are doing well. But there are quite a few that are not, and I don't know that parents are aware of that. So they think they're taking their children to a better educational experience, and in fact, they aren't. And so getting to that marketing piece, we know in KCPS we're going to have to do a much better job around how we market. I think in the past we have really tried to be polite. We've tried not to engage in an adversarial position with charters. And we don't want to do that because I think charters are going to be here. I don't think they're going to go anywhere. So we have to figure out how we can work together in this space. But I think we have to find ways to be very transparent with the data and make sure our parents are fully informed as they're making decisions about their students' education.
You've had a 23-year career with Kansas City Public Schools, starting right here at Northeast. What makes you the best fit for the next era in education here in Kansas City?
Well, I think the fact that I'm from here, and when I say I'm from here, is I chose KCPS. I chose it 23 years ago, and I still choose it today. And I'm not speaking negatively about anyone that's come before, but for me, this is not a stepping stone. This is not a position that I want to hold so that I can get somewhere else. I'm here because I love this community. I always have, and I still do. And I'm very passionate about making this school district the best that it can possibly be. I want KCPS to be a school system that people will say years down the road, how in the world did they do that? That wasn't that the district that was unaccredited. How are they now one of the top districts in this city, in this state, in this country? Mm-hmm. How did they do that? That is my goal, and I think it's my passion for the work and the people here. I care about the people. That care and empathy, I think, is important. But I'm also driven by my faith. I believe, I dare to believe that we can and we will do great things. And I'm excited about the people who are on board with me here making it happen.
This is serious business for you. You're choking up. This means a lot to you. I can tell. And you've got the roadmap and do you want to stop?
I'm sorry.
No, this is, oh my God. First one out of the gate. I'll leave now. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make her.
I think you were going to pick.
I know, right?
Oh, wow.
It
means something to me. Yes. Wow. I know what awesome students and families we have here. And I don't know that everybody knows it, but I wanted to put us on display. I want people to see the greatness that's here in KCPS.
I don't even know where
to go
with that.
I want everyone to know.
That's so cool. And I've interviewed a lot of superintendents, and I'm just going to say it right now. You seem to have the fire in the gut and the most passion to see that out there and get it there. So kudos to you for that. Last question is an easy
okay.
one. We got to come out of this on a good side.
All right.
I mean, that's good. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you cry.
No, it's okay.
Favorite memory of teaching at Northeast High School?
Favorite memory. I would say my favorite memory, in addition to the cultural events, that was always awesome. But when I taught music, just seeing my students come into my classroom, sometimes I would have children who didn't even speak English, right? But what I saw in teaching music is that it is a universal language. And we were able to communicate and connect in that music classroom, and it was a place that all children knew they could come and wanted to come, and they could be successful there. And so that taught me a lot during that time period, even when there were barriers for language, that there are ways that we can connect with other people, and music happened to be one of those ways. And I had the privilege of teaching music for 10 years here, connecting with students from all over this world, and really building some positive relationships with them and seeing their growth and development and the confidence that they would gain in that classroom. That was always something that touched me.
And as a debate husband or educator husband, one of my favorite things is when those students come back to you years
yes.
later and say, you got me here. That's so cool. Have
yes.
you had any of those kind of?
Oh, I have lots of those. Many of my former students I'm still in touch with. And just seeing the things that they're accomplishing today is just awesome. In fact, I remember taking a group of students to New York City some years ago, and many of them had never left the city boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so to take them to New York and to see the world, what I wanted to do was open up the world to them. I wanted them to see how big this world is, but I also wanted them to imagine their potential and possibilities in this world. And a lot of those kids come back and say, thank you for taking us. After you did that, I wanted to do this. And many of them are now traveling and they're leading and they're doing awesome things. And so that was just a wonderful experience. And I wish I had more opportunities to do that. That was toward the end of my time here when I finally worked up enough courage and enough resources to be able to take the kids to New York. It was hard. We tried to do fundraising, but I had to do a little pushing. I think I pushed a little bit on the principal and the superintendent. Like, we need money. And we got it. And I was able to take them. But I think it's made all the difference in their lives.
Anything else that you'd like to add that I haven't covered?
The only thing I would say is we really want this community to continue to wrap its arms around our schools, our school district. We want our community to come in, visit our schools, see the great things that are actually happening here, and then just get on board with us as we start this moving forward together. We want them to come in to be a part. We want their voices to be engaged, and we want to just strengthen the work that we're doing. And as we start to think about who we want to be as a school system, as we reimagine who we are, we want everyone in our community to be a part of that.
Thank you once again to our sponsors, Shemeika's Online Market and Deli and Seaburg Mufflers. For all our Northeast Newscast episodes, articles, and more, visit northeastnews.net.